You can find more information, photos and advice sheets on all the plants and recipes that we talk about in this podcast by heading to the links in the show notes or on our website at sarahraven.com. Welcome to Grow, Cook, Eat, Arrange, the podcast of me, Sarah Raven, and lots of wonderful, interesting guests. Today, I have Rachel Siegfried, who was with us in the very early days, 2 years ago, actually, when we started the podcast. And she is an expert in growing cut flowers and has one of the most wonderful cut flower farms in the UK, I think, in Oxfordshire, in the Oxfordshire countryside. Well, she'll tell us where it is and why it's there and how long she's been there. But welcome back, Rachel. It's lovely to have you. And we're going to chat mainly today about your brand new book, which is out this spring, called The Cut Flower Source Book. And it's really concentrating on perennials and woody plants for cutting. And so we'll sort of meander our way through and get to why you chose those as your special subject, really. But welcome.
Oh, thanks, Sarah. It's really lovely to be back.
So, Rachel, why don't you tell us all about a little bit of history about Green and Gorgeous, how long you've been there, all that kind of stuff before we get into the book?
Yeah. So Green and Gorgeous, well, we're celebrating our 15th anniversary this year.
Great.
So, yes. So we started back in 2008 and we had 2 acres. It was an organic market garden that we took on right next to the River Thames in South Oxfordshire. And we slowly changed all of those vegetables over to flowers and grew. And we're now 15 years later up to 5 acres.
Wow.
And that is it. We filled every space on the farm and we grow a huge range of plants. But yes, on the subject of the book, I would say 3/4 of what we grow now are woody plants, shrubs, trees, climbers and perennials.
Yes. So again, before we get onto them, who are your customers mainly? So where's your market?
We do a lot of weddings.
Yeah.
And we arrange the flowers for our weddings as well. We have a sort of flower studio next to the flower fields. We also have a Saturday farm gate stroke shop where we sell our flowers to the local community. And we do lots of courses on both growing and arranging cut flowers. We do business ones as well for people, aspiring flower farmers. So those are the 3 main ways that we sell our flowers. And then we do other bits and bobs as well.
Yeah. But you're also, the thing I love about your Instagram is that you're also a ceramicist, aren't you? I mean, you throw your own pots that you use for vases. I mean, it's just like, it's literally from plot to plate, but it's everything. It's just everything.
Yeah. Well, I like being called a ceramicist, and I can see that mug. I recognize that potter. I am envious of that beautiful mug.
I love James Burnett Stewart.
Yeah. His work's amazing.
Yeah. I love it.
The decoration.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I do in the winter months, you know, so we really kind of stop with the flower selling and weddings, etc., in October. So then I have quite a long stretch where I can get into the pottery studio and make vases.
Yeah.
Obviously, everything I make is flower related, even though I have had a go at mugs this winter as well.
Okay.
So the plan is to use those for our workshops and also to sell vases in our shop.
And also, I mean, you use them for your weddings, don't you? I mean, you supply the containers that your flowers go into, which is just such a lovely thing in terms of plot.
Yeah.
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 Fabulous. So why particularly this group of plants rather than the annuals and, for instance, and biennials I'm so obsessed by? Tell us why it's the woody perennials and the climbers and the perennials, really, that you have selected.
Well, it's partly because you've got the annuals covered.
So, okay.
I thought, I can't write a book on those. I need to find something else. But no, seriously, I think because of the wedding work, I have to come up with the goods. And over the years, the weather has got more difficult, as we all know.
Yeah.
And I was finding when we were having these extreme weather events and my annuals often weren't coping very well, it was the perennials that were the dependables that saved the business. I mean, I'm going to be dramatic, but it has almost got to that point. And it's ongoing. So that's probably the main reason. But then as I started to go over to them and explore them further, I found that I just really loved what they did in arrangements,
that they
create quite a distinctive look that you can't perhaps get with just annuals. It suits my natural style. I can use things that no one would ever buy in a shop.
Yes,
quite. And of course, that's what we can all do from our own gardens. Yeah. It just opens up the possibilities, really. Yeah.
And perfume too, isn't it?
Perfume in the winter months, you know, bringing in a few stems. I had just back here, I had winter honeysuckle last week, just filling the room. There's just so much to be explored with these plant groups. And I think, you know, 15 years I've been doing this, I'm getting a bit older and they are low maintenance compared to annuals.
Yeah. Are you having to irrigate a lot or can you get away with not?
It depends. I mean, some of the things are certainly very drought tolerant and seem to positively thrive without water. We are very dry here in the southeast, so we have actually had to put a borehole in the past 3 years, and we are irrigating quite a bit now.
Yeah.
Yes.
What would you say are your most drought tolerant? I mean, if you were to mention, I don't know, three or four that really, if we have another summer like last summer.
I mean, obviously, Achillea. You know, a lot of these first year flowering perennials from seed do very well in this group. Selene, which is going to be one of my favourites that I'm going to mention. Catinache, Cupid's Dart, Scabiosas, of course, we love. And then some of the grasses. We grow a lot of grasses. Yeah. Echinacea. Some of the late summer flowering tall perennials are very good as well. And actually, they don't get quite as lush when they don't have as much water. And then they don't need staking. So they're even less work.
And more flowery, maybe, you know, with less leaf, maybe.
Yes, perhaps.
Yeah.
Laryngiums, of course.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So to stick with our theme that we've done so far this year in 2023, which is 12 best, I asked Rachel if she would be happy to select 12 absolute top favourite plants from her book. So I wonder if we could start having a look at those now and you explain how you divided them into your categories.
Yeah, now this was a tough one because I've got 128. It's quite in the book. It's got quite an extensive plant directory, all grown here, all tried and tested. So I thought the best way to do this, to kind of narrow it down and make it a bit easier, I've divided into the what I call the four elements of an arrangement. So when I build an arrangement, it always has a really good mix and balance of materials, which I divide into framework, supporting, focals, and a sort of final accent. And I find if I always have these four, if you like, layers, components, then I get a really lovely, balanced, beautiful mixed arrangement with lots of variety and interest. So I suppose, I just thought I'd choose. These are my favourites this week.
Yes, exactly.
That could change.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing about a grower, because you suddenly, something is highlighted by slightly different climate or slightly different moment, isn't it? And then you just fall in love with it completely afresh. That's what I love about gardening in a way.
Yeah, especially when you go out and about and you might see something that looks so much better in someone else's garden.
Yes.
Of course, this is just a springboard, what I've talked about. This is just what grows well for me in quite extreme conditions, but there's plenty of other plants to explore. But shall we start with framework?
Let's start with framework, yes.
Because that's what I always start with when I'm building an arrangement, and many of us do, don't we? So this is the kind of architecture of your arrangement, the woody branches that create the overall scale, shape, spaces for other flowers, and you kind of want stems that are quite characterful. You're not looking for ramrod straight, because that's going to make a pretty difficult, stiff looking arrangement, not very naturalistic. So shrubs and trees mainly in this group. And I've gone for the first one is Spirea thunbergii, which is often known as baby's breath Spirea. And I don't think it's as well known as many others, like Spirea arguta is much more common. This one is earlier. Mm. It's very special. It is literally the earliest shrub to flower on our farm. It comes just after the blackthorn and the cherry plum are finished in the hedgerow. And you're thinking, I just need some lovely bare branches with very delicate little flowers on. And there it is. So the other reason actually I love it is because I actually get three stages of harvest from it. So it's really good when you're picking, choosing what to grow in any of the plant groups. Try and find things you can pick more than once. Look at them in different ways. So this one, great spring blossoming branches, lovely fresh green foliage for quite a sort of feathery, wispy, delicate green foliage plant in the summer months that doesn't, you know, I often find with summer foliage, it can be a little bit too heavy.
So true.
And a lot of summer flowers are quite meadowy, aren't they? And small headed.
Yeah.
And this one doesn't, it's not overbearing. It's delicate. So great for the summer. But again, in the autumn, it gets this wonderful burnished bronzy color to its leaves. It almost looks like an Amsonia or something.
Exactly. Yes.
And you can see it. Are you looking at the picture now? It's just so lovely.
Yes, really.
Nice sort of colorful paint stroke effects in the autumn when used as a framework branch.
We don't grow it. And I immediately emailed Josie, our head gardener, and said, we've got to put some of it. We're just doing a huge planting here of shrubs, actually, because I have never been a shrub person. But I was just 60 the other day, and my husband's giving me an orchard with some shrubs in it for some trees to go in there. Anyway, so this went on the list. But isn't it interesting, Thunbergii and Thunbergia? Is that named after somebody called Mr. Thunberg, do we think? Because there are so many plants.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm
not sure.
No.
It is very much, I mean, it does look a bit like Gypsophila, dare I say it.
But
in the spring, because the flowers come before the leaves. You get that lovely, light, frothy effect.
Absolutely.
Highly recommend that. And because you're cutting it three times a year, of course, you need three times as much.
Yes.
So bear that in mind, because if you cut for the autumn colour, then you're not going to get the spring blossom.
Mm, yeah, quite. Okay, so then what your next one?
So my next choice, and I just can't resist this as a framework branch, is Rosa glauca.
Yeah, I love it.
Or rubifolia. I mean, what a winner that is. The colour is unique.
Yeah.
A smoky plum grey. Wonderful shape to the stems as well. Very arching, naturally arching.
Yeah.
They can be very tall and graceful. So they add a lot of movement and air to arrangements. And it doesn't matter what you put it with. Mm. As soon as you add it, it makes whatever you're doing effortlessly stylish.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like Solomon's seal, isn't it? I always think Solomon's seal does the same.
It's ticking on the shape and the colour really strongly. Now, because it's, you know, you've got to bear in mind, you can't really pick it before midsummer. It's not going to hold. So that's the one thing I would say. This is a midsummer to autumn cut, woody cut.
And has lovely hips.
It does, but I never get any hips because I literally pick every single stem.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, yeah, well, that's flower farming for you. It's a cracking plant. I love it. And I actually love the little single flowers. I mean, they're very delicate in June, but they're very pretty. And then you're next.
Yeah, my next one is actually snowberry.
Yeah.
Now, this, I never really thought much of snowberry when I saw it growing around, scruffy, suckering, you know, few sparse berries that would drop off as soon as you picked it.
Yeah.
But then there was a nursery in Holland called Kolster who started to breed the Magical series. Now, they are a different thing altogether, where they have very good upright, stiff growth, masses of berries on them, and they come in a huge range from like pearly white right through to, you know, blush pink, really deep wine red. So you've got a lot of choice there. And as long as they've got Magical, the name, you know you're onto a winner.
Where can people get them?
They do. You can get some of the magical ones. If you Google, there are nurseries now selling them. I'm not saying they have every single one because there's literally about 20, but they have a couple. And that's all you really need. I think Charming Fantasy, that's one that's quite readily available. And I think the reason I've put this one in is as you get to the end of the sort of picking season, many of the supporting flowers are starting to finish. And this just does that same job in a berry form. It is also my most popular bee plant.
Oh, yeah, the tiny flowers.
Yeah, smothered in honeybees. Ooh. And also I pick it for the wonderful foliage. It's a bluish green, very delicate. It kind of reminds me of a maiden's hair fern. So it's quite frondy and light. And as I said before, in summer arrangements, you don't want heavy foliage. Mm. You want the flowers to shine and you just want that little touch of green that's kind of supporting the flowers. Mm. So again, I'm literally just planting another 100 of those because wow. I've realized I need to cut it for foliage as well as the berries.
Gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really wonderful introduction for me. Again, I mean, I've grown snowberry in the ornamental hedges here, but the magical series is new to me. So again, it's so lovely to find new things. So your next category is supporting, isn't it?
It is. So this is the next thing that goes into my arrangement. Once I've fixed those framework branches, and I don't use masses of, you only need about five framework branches, something like that. The next thing are the supporting. And these tend to be, they can be flowers or foliage. They tend to be smaller in, leaf or flower, and they tend to be branching in habit. And they are like the understory. But if you're thinking of your arrangement as a border, a garden border, they're the understory. And, they're often more commonly known as filler.
Yeah.
But I just think filler just does not do, that word doesn't really do justice for this huge group of plants. And I would say most perennials and woody plants are in this supporting category.
Yeah.
There's just so much you can do with these. Now, what have I chosen? Oh, yes. So the first one I've gone for is actually the earliest perennial that we cut, and that's Helleborus hybridus, so hellebore. And I actually favour, I know there's so many gorgeous hellebores, but I like Harvington cultivars from 12 Nuns Nursery. They just have done such brilliant breeding. They have a very good clarity of colour and depth to them. They're also, I find, quite a bit hardier than some hellebores. So that's quite important. Now, as we all know, we can't really pick hellebores without them drooping. We've all tried. We've all tried every single way of searing and, submerging and everything else. Nothing is reliable. So I just wait until they form seed pods.
Yeah, yeah. It is the only way to guarantee they'll give you a good week, isn't it?
They will. And I quite like it when they get more muted and earthier in colour, because then they are the supporting flower to the more flamboyant spring bulbs like tulips and ranunculus.
Yeah.
And they're just there as a kind of, a quieter, not competing, but just complementing nicely in their quiet way.
Yeah, they're very blending, aren't they?
Very blending, gorgeous. So lots of those.
Great. And you're next?
My next one has to be Stellini vulgaris, bladder campion. Just a native wildflower, incredibly easy from seed. Got to sort of mention that many of my perennials are grown from seed and many of them are first year flowering like this one. We've already started it off in the greenhouse and we should have flowers by July. And an abundance of flowers. That's one of the reasons I've chosen this one, because it is so abundant. It gives two cuts as well, two crops. And the other reason is that it is a great blender as well. It's quite neutral in its sort of grayish green colouring.
And to make sure you get the second cut, do you just cut it right to the ground, including the foliage, or do you just take every single flower and seed head off after its first flush?
Yeah, you can just take a pair of shears and just take the stems off. You don't need to take all the leaves as well, and it will happily come up again and pretty much as good as the first. It really is. And once you start using it and put it with just about everything you can, yes, you realise that it works, especially when that meadow look.
Yeah,
it just works across the board.
Yes, sure.
And it dries. Great. Yes. You know, people are really into drying flowers these days. That's a good one to do.
Yeah. And your next one is a really lovely yellow raspberry, which I grow raspberries, but I hadn't thought of the yellow, which I think is a beautiful idea.
It is. And actually, it tastes amazing. You always think, oh, a yellow raspberry, it's not going to have any flavour, but it tastes really just as good. So large, soft, golden fruits. And it's really autumn fruiting, so it's very easy to look after.
Yeah.
Cut it all back at this time of year and then up it all comes. And again, it's that, oh gosh, you know, it's the end of the season and I'm starting to run out of flowers. And that's when these fruits and berries are really important to my arrangements. You know, it has got thorns. If you want a one that doesn't have spines, then look at Autumn Treasure, another really great variety.
And you use blackberries as well, don't you? But the rubus that we're talking about, the yellow one, is called All Gold, just for everyone to be clear. And we'll put the plant list that we're talking about, that Rachel is mentioning, in the podcast notes. So don't worry, you don't have to make notes. And of course, they're all in Rachel's book. And so then the next category are your focals.
Yes, the focal flowers, the showstoppers, that you don't need as many of these. I think if you do a lot of arranging, you know that it's the supporting you need masses of. You know, think about that when you're actually planning your plots. But focals, you can get away with far less. I would usually use only about 10, perhaps two different types in an arrangement.
Yeah.
And I do find, you know, with all of these elements, they all have peaks and troughs, you know. So spring is when there's loads of focal flowers because you've got all the spring bulbs, and then you get a little bit of a lull until the peonies and roses come in. So I have actually chosen for my first one a very early flowering peony. I'm always looking for peonies to really fill that May gap.
Mm.
And the hybrid types, which are the sort of tend to be single and semi-double, are earlier than the fully, you know, double types. So this is Buckeye Bell, which is a semi-double, glossy, deep red, sumptuous peony with really striking golden stamens. It is very decadent. It feels very decadent. I mean, that's, you know, and I think a peony that is a single or a semi-double is a more striking focal because of that scent.
The sort of bowl look of them. But also Buckeye Bell is such an easy, reliable grower, isn't it? I mean, I've had it in the garden here for 25 years.
Yes. I mean, peonies, you know, you don't really need to do anything to them, do you? Once they've done their 3 years and you can start picking them, as long as you don't overpick them.
Yeah.
That's something that you have to be careful. You can only really take half the stems of a peony plant. Leave the rest for the crown. Otherwise, the peony will become weak and the flowers will become very small. And we don't want that. Then it won't really be a focal flower.
No.
So that's my choice on the peonies. There's lots of early ones to look at. Coral Charm's another one, of course. But I would look at those for your May kind of gap.
Mm-hmm.
The next one I've gone for is an herbaceous clematis. So
oh, I'm so happy you put this in, because we've had this on trial here and we absolutely love it. And it flowers for ages. It's such a good one, this East River.
Yes, East River. Beautiful, quite large star-shaped flowers in a lilac. Yeah. And I think one of the things that a lot of people don't realise with herbaceous clematis is they have an incredible vase life.
Mm-hmm.
They can give you 2 weeks. I mean, I've thrown them out in the past because I'm just bored of looking at them.
Yeah.
They'll last for 2 weeks in a vase.
Amazing. Yeah, they are incredible.
The only thing, you know, is you've got to think about it's non-climbing, non-clinging. So you've got to find a way to support those stems, those floppy stems, and keep them nice and straight.
Yeah.
But still be able to pick them, which is always a challenge with climbing sort of plants.
Yeah. We have these little metal gates here.
Yeah.
And it's just, they're so pretty because it's not a hugely tall grower. I mean, it gets to about a meter, doesn't it? And we just tie them in quite regularly. And they're very easy to untie if you want to pick. But they aren't self-clinging, which actually is a real bonus if you're wanting to pick them because you don't have to unravel them the whole time.
Yeah, that's true, actually. And really lovely with roses. They time themselves very well, don't they, for midsummer and the beautiful garden roses. So what a gorgeous combination. And, you know, have a look at that herbaceous clematis group because there are many really, I'm kind of trialing. I've got a little trial. Yeah. I call it a trial area with many different types of herbaceous clematis now.
Yeah.
And I could not resist having a rose.
Yes.
So roses are included in my book. They are a woody plant after all. But all the roses I grow are repeat flowering. And I've chosen one that repeats so well that I pick masses of it in the autumn, which is really quite handy. And this is Rosa Stephen Rouleau. So it's quite a strange name. And it's one of those kind of chameleon novel type roses that you either love or hate.
Yes.
I would say. Yeah. It sort of shifts in colour from a milky coffee through to a lavender grey with some strange kind of mustardy tones when it's in bud. So there's a lot going on.
It's very sophisticated.
Mm. Yes, it's very. I love it. It goes with everything. It literally, it's one of those neutrals. And if you like Coco Loco, try this one because it is far healthier and more productive.
Yeah.
But does a similar thing. Yeah.
Great. So the final category is accents, which are, well, you explain what they are.
Yeah, they're the final little flourish to your arrangement. And they give movement, they give air, they bridge. So they can, if you choose them carefully, the colours can kind of help to link other colours in your arrangement. Yeah. As well. They're my favorite group to grow. You don't need masses of them because you only need to add a few. If you add too many, you're going to end up with quite a fuzzy, kind of overly busy looking arrangement. So just go easy on the accents. My first one, they tend to be grasses. All grasses are accents and climbers. But I have actually included an early accent, which is a fox's grape fritillary. Fritillaria uva vulpus.
Yeah.
Now, I've included this one just because I love its dusky purple bell-shaped flowers, which have a little golden tip. But yes, many people would think, well, why not go for the snake's head fritillary? Mm. But this one I find is easier to grow because I tend to force mine in pots. It does that more readily. It also is very easy to divide and bring back the following year. And it's cheaper.
Yeah.
And let's all be practical here. You know, when you're cutting, you need quite a few. So you can't spend an absolute fortune on your bulbs. So check out that one.
Yeah. And it's very prolific too. I find it much more prolific than the Meleagris.
Yes, it is. But it does a similar job. It sours the sweetness of spring flowers.
Yeah.
And you do need a little bit souring. It gets too sickly otherwise. Now, the next one, I love this honeysuckle, Lonicera americana, American woodbine. It's a very early flowering honeysuckle. I can start picking this sometimes in April.
Wow. Yeah.
And the thing is, the foliage is great too.
Yeah, and the shapes, I love the shape.
It just messes up your arrangement just enough, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And it flowers through until about June time. So it's got a very long picking period, I think. You know, the bicoloured pinks, yellows and peaches in there help to link other flowers at that time, like ranunculus and Icelandic poppies, beautifully.
Yes, lovely, lovely. And of course the perfume, but you know, with any honeysuckle. Well, actually, it's not quite true, not all honeysuckles, but with Americana, it's incredibly perfumed, isn't it?
Mm. And very strong in growth as well. So you're going to get a lot of material off it. This is always, especially as a flower farmer, this has always got to be in my checklist of good plants that they produce abundant amounts for me to pick. The final one is a grass, so that's Pennisetum. I've put down here Velosum, which is the feather top But you've also got, you've got so many in that group. You've got Carly Rose, which is worth looking at, a lovely dusky pink beige bottle brush flower, creates a kind of halo effect, especially when it's backlit. A softness, almost like you're looking at the arrangement and it's slightly blurred.
Yes, I like that's a really blurriness. Good description. A bit of fogging.
Yes, yes, softening.
Oh, that's such a great list. And I hope you all have heard, is the thing about talking to Rachel is it's just based on such hardworking, hard growing, and just the knowledge of what are the key performers. And so even though I've been doing this now for over 30 years, I always come out of a chat with Rachel just thinking, oh, I've got to grow this and I've got to grow that. And I know that I can trust the information. And that's Rachel's actually coming here to teach on the 20th of June when our perennial cutting garden here will have quite a lot of things, including East River, clematis, etc., which you'll find on the website. But Rachel, thank you so much. Her new book is out right now already, and it's called The Cut Flower Source Book, Exceptional Perennials and Woody Plants for Cutting. And I couldn't more strongly recommend it. It's a reference book that both Josie, the head gardener, and I are using now really quite a lot. And we've got tons of pages turned down with notes to each other, with post-it notes saying, what about this? What about that? Yeah, just such valuable information. Thanks so much, Rachel, for joining us again, and see you in June.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thanks so much for listening to Grow Cookie to Range, and I hope you enjoyed hearing Rachel chatting about her flower farm, Green and Gorgeous, and her new book that is just out this spring. Next week, we're building up towards Easter, and so really wonderfully, I'm rejoined by Arthur Parkinson, my co-conspirator, originally of Grow Cookie to Range. And he is coming back to talk about the book he's been off writing and drawing, which is called Chicken Boy. And it is all about his life with hens, which, along with gardens and flowers and dahlias and tulips, are his other absolute glowing passion. You can find more information, photos, and advice sheets on all the plants and recipes that we talk about in this podcast by heading to the links in the show notes or on our website at sarahraven.com.